So our topic this morning is on, we're talking about morality, life in Christ. So it's a general topic of virtue or virtues. And we're starting with moral virtues, and then we'll move on to theological virtues, which is the way the Catechism does it. The Catechism in number 1804 defines moral virtues this way. They're firm attitudes, stable dispositions, habitual perfections of intellect and will that govern our actions, order our passions, and guide our conduct according to reason and faith. They, that's these moral virtues, make possible ease, self-mastery, and joy in leading a morally good life. The moral virtues are acquired by human effort. That's essential to their definition. They are the fruit and the seed of morally good acts. They dispose all the powers of the human being for communion with divine love. Now that's very packed, but it's a very good definition. Sometimes we find things hard to do, hard to be generous, hard to be patient, hard to be whatever it might be that is required of moral behaviour. And it might look as though when it's really hard and I'm doing it, it may appear to be more virtuous. In fact, it's not. If it is really hard and I still do it, that's wonderful. And that's the way to acquire virtue, of course. But it becomes more and more virtuous the easier it becomes. Virtue is essentially, as it says there, a way of joyfully behaving. So that a person who's really humble, to take one virtue, there's been a lifetime of resistance of pride and various other things to bring them to that point. But when you meet a really humble person, it's, you could say, natural to them. They are just naturally that way. They've become that way through effort. But do you get my point? It's actually a virtue is an ease that's gradually acquired. If it's not easy, you still have to do it. And it will require enormous energy sometimes to resist certain movements. But actually the virtue grows as we become more easy with it. And it becomes more part of who we have become. But the essence of a moral virtue is that it's something we do. And we all start from different places and all that, we know that. But it's something we do and we need to do it. And as he says, it's the seed of morally good acts, the virtue. But it's also the fruit of them. The more you do something beautiful, isn't this how we train our children? You train the body and then hopefully the soul is being trained through the body. You train a little child to genuflect. And hopefully, their little soul one day will learn to add prayer to it. But their body is trained, their soul. You train them to make the sign of the cross on their. It's what you're doing as parents and grandparents. You're training the body in a way, but the soul is picking up. The fruit of that training, it's doing something inside to the whole person as well. So that's a definition, anyhow, of moral virtue. Pretty dense, there's a lot to think about in there, but it's pretty complete, I think. And I'm reminded of that lovely statement by St. Paul in Philippians chapter 4, verse 8, where he says, whatever is true, whatever is honourable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is pleasing, whatever is commendable, if there's any excellence, if there's anything worthy of praise, think about these things. Now, of course, I can't go through every virtue, it would take us forever, and I don't think I need to. So I'm just going to spend the rest of this fairly brief period on the moral virtues, looking at the four that are called the cardinal virtues. These are kind of examples. They're called cardinal, I've got it there for you, because they have a pivotal role among the moral virtues, at least traditionally. It's a little bit arbitrary, but not totally arbitrary. The Latin word cardo means a hinge. Cardinal actually comes from the same word, the hinge. So it's pivotal of all the virtues. And it goes right back, this tradition of naming these four as cardinal virtues, right back to the latest of the Jewish writings of the scripture, the Book of Wisdom, which is about contemporary with the turn of the eras, Jesus' birth, round about that time. And in the Book of Wisdom, chapter 8, verse 7, which comes from Alexandria and is a Jewish writing, it says, wisdom teaches, and it names the four, temperance and prudence, justice and courage. Nothing in life is more profitable for mortals than these. And that would have come, by the way, from the Greek, the great Greek philosophers who looked at the ethics and so on, Aristotle among them, who talk about these virtues. So let's look at the four of them. Just a little moment of touching on it. Prudence. Spend a few pages on that. So this is one of the cardinal, pivotal virtues that's crucial, really, in our life. And please God, we learn it. And it's often hardly learned, you know. Prudence, or what is sometimes called practical wisdom, it's always about behaviour. What to do, what decisions to make, what choices to take, what step to move in, what direction to head. So this practical wisdom is the virtue, according to the Catechism, number 1806, the virtue that disposes practical reason. I hope you see what I mean, what they mean by the word practical. Reason, not speculative, but about what to do in practice. So it disposes practical reason to discern our true good in every circumstance and to choose the right means of achieving it. It guides the judgment of conscience, which we looked at last week. It applies moral principles to particular cases. So it's very relevant, or they all are, to conscience. So last week we looked at conscience. Now, how are we going to be guided? We've got all these general principles. One of the principles might be that, oh, birth control, you know, sexual intercourse has in view love of the spouses and life. So there's a general principle not to cut off sexual behaviour from conception. And we can all see the kind of wisdom of that. There's another general principle that talks about the need for parents to be spiritually and humanly and emotionally and physically capable of loving their children and not stretched to the limit and so psychologically disturbed that they just can't give love. That's obviously a very general principle. You know what I mean? You could add about 15, 20, 25, 30 general wise principles, and then here you are, here I am, here she is, here we are. This is what we've got. What do we do? That's the practical. Well, prudence is required to not just jump to that principle and follow it, disregarding all the others, or picking and choosing as you wish, but somehow having a basis from which we can make a prudent, conscientious decision as to the next step of love in our real situation. That's what prudence is as a virtue. Marvellous virtue, and we've all got it at little limits, and hopefully when you go to consult someone in a consultative area, a psychologist or someone, psychiatrist, hopefully a priest or whatever, or a friend, their prudence will be their key virtue, won't it, to help you discern. Now, in its treatment of this topic of prudence, there's a Compendium of Social Doctrine of the Church was brought out in 2004 in our local justice committee in the parish in which I am, Kippax. We spent about a year going through this. Very, very good. It's a good summary. But like all compendiums, like the Catechism itself, really. Perhaps like a telephone book, I don't know. It's actually very tight. It's always referring to other documents. And when you read the other documents, they're richer. Of course, they can afford to be, because they, like an encyclical might have 30 pages on an issue, and they're summing it up. And so it tends to be, I'm not here to criticise the compendium, and I don't want to criticise, it's quite a good book to have. But it's a very hard book to work your way through, and it tends to be very general. Lose punch by being a compendium, abstract. Anyhow, in that, and I've slightly adapted it because I can't leave anything alone, it has these quite wonderful points, I think. The exercise of prudence, this is number 548 of that document that I referred you to. The exercise of prudence calls for a progressive formation in order to acquire the necessary qualities, and names some of them. Firstly, learning from the past. The capacity to remember one's own past experience with objectivity, without falsification. So you learn from something you did well, and you think that really worked well. So next time, you're a bit quicker to come to that. You know, you've got that implanted in you somewhere. Or you made a very poor judgment and a poor mistake. So you admit that it was poor, sinful, wrong, and you learn from it. So that next time, now that you're clearer about how behaviour should be, where the boundary should be, or whatever it might be, next time you come into a similar situation, you're either going to sin more grievously because now you see, or you're going to act prudently because you've learnt. Do you get me? So there's one obvious factor of acquiring prudence. Secondly, docility. An authentic love for the truth that helps learning from others and profiting from their experience. So if I was silly enough, I meaning anyone in the room, if I was silly enough to think that I had it all together and didn't need advice, I might be making some pretty bad mistakes. So the docility to listen to the church, for example, the magisterium, is doesn't mean it's always going to be right, but to be starting from a position that they're more likely to be right than I am, so let's listen and read and ponder, and we might eventually have to do what Luther did and say, here I stand, I can't do it. I disagree, it's just impossible for me to go along that way. But if you said that out of pride, it'd be one thing, wouldn't it? If you said it out of docility, it's something quite different. So this is a lovely virtue too, docility. Thirdly, diligence. The ability to face the unexpected with objectivity in order to turn every situation to the service of good, resisting the temptation to intemperance, injustice, or cowardice, which can all affect our behaviour. So, to continue, and we're still quoting from that compendium, these dispositions enable the development of the necessary conditions for the moment of decision. And you might know people who can quite quickly sum up a situation and make a good decision. And you seek them out in the areas in which they're like that. So, foresight is needed. The capacity to weigh the efficacy of a possible course of action for the attainment of the goal which is moral. Foresight. Do we demonstrate? Or do we stay home? Do we write a letter to the Senate Committee on this stem cell research? In fact, I wrote one, but anyhow, I had to make a decision to write it or not write it, because you've got to, and was I right or wrong to write it? Well, just do your best. But do you or don't you? How do you behave in a situation? Do you remain silent? Do you speak out? Do you say yes? Do you say no? You need to foresee the results of what I do and its effects on others, for all of us. Circumspection. The capacity to weigh the circumstances that contribute to the creation of the situation in which a decision is to be made to act in a certain way. just aware of all, as much as you can, the various circumstances that are involved here in this decision I'm making and who it could affect. In the social context, prudence can be specified under two particular forms. One, the capacity to order everything for the greatest good of society. And two, the capacity to obey legitimate authority but without compromising the dignity of the human person. Now, that's very brief, but I hope it gives you a bit of a feel for this cardinal virtue of prudence, which is, I think it was Aristotle said, it's the greatest of the practical virtues. A second virtue, and I'll do this so quickly, is justice. Justice is the virtue, according to the same catechism, that consists in a constant and firm will to give their due to God and neighbour. And that's all I'm going to say about justice is on that page, because it's such a whopping big topic, and I think in principle it's clear enough. In the scriptures, when anyone's described as a just person, it means quite simply they do the will of God. That's the absolute definition. Joseph was a just man. Means Joseph does the will of God. They may not have been, I think they weren't as socially conscious as perhaps we are or should be. But there's a definition at the top there from the Catechism. They give their due to God, you know, obeying God, but also due to their neighbour. What their neighbour deserves and should do, we're aware of that. Justice towards others, quoting the Catechism, disposes a person to respect the rights of each and to establish in human relationships the harmony that promotes equity with regard to persons and the common good. I'm sorry to do that so quickly, but I don't think I've got any choice. Courage. Fortitude or courage. And everyone's got different temperaments here. Some will find this easier than others. I'm more into flight than fight, but I've met people who are more into fight than flight. Now, fight or flight, neither of them are to do with courage. The soldier who goes into the war and tears up and does something absolutely mad, but actually gets rid of about four Japanese things or something in the war and ends up with a, what do you get? A VC or something. He may have just been bravado, or he may have just lost his... I'm not knocking it, I'm just saying you never know. Courage is something when you can be experiencing incredible fear, but you still do it. And it's prudent, and it's right, and it's reasonable, and it's heroic. And I bet there are thousands of people in every military combat who have courage that never noticed, because they never did anything quite so dramatic. Whatever. So, courage. Quote from the Catechism, the virtue that ensures firmness in difficulties and constancy in pursuit of the good. It strengthens the resolve to resist temptations and to overcome obstacles in the moral life. It enables a person to conquer fear, even the fear of death, and to face trials and persecution. And as I think I just said a minute ago, feeling courageous and being courageous are disconnected. They've got no relationship, really. How you feel is one thing. The courageous person is the person who may be feeling very timorous, but still does what has to be done. That's real courage. And this is something I just love here. They're the only two pictures I could find of birds. That one's hanging on our kitchen wall, and that one I can't remember where I got it from. But I like that because it helped me one day when I was in Assisi. Reflecting, there's a little book on a reflection on the crucifix in San Damiano, outside Assisi, where it's the crucifix that St. Francis looked at and that spoke to him, build my church, you know the story, I presume. And in the book reflecting on that, this lovely statement was made. It's courage that makes saints. And courage is nothing more nor less than trusting in God's grace, which is always present. That's courage. For in our trials and sufferings, God is always there, like the space that surrounds a bird. I found that most helpful and extraordinarily beautiful. God's grace is present now to each one of us in the room to do God's will now, and that's all we're asked to do, and we've got all the grace to do it. Not to do what we'd want to do or others might expect us to do, no, or what we think we should do, they're separate issues, but to do the will of God now, to take a next step of love, which is what morality is about now, is possible for everyone, everywhere, at all times, and all the grace is given to do it. Where we get mucked up is in our expectations, other people's expectations. Guilt comes in and we get all over the place, we don't know what to do, and we lose courage because we're worried about the future and all the rest of it. But if we could only believe that, it would help us all be more courageous. And finally, temperance. Catechism again. Temperance is the virtue that moderates the attraction of pleasures and provides balance in the use of created goods. It ensures the will's mastery over instincts and keeps desires within limits of what is honourable. Quite a beautiful definition, but it's quite a vast area. And I'll conclude this point of moral virtues with two statements from the Catechism, and then we'll have a slight pause. Human virtues acquired by education. This is number 1810. Human virtues acquired by education, by deliberate acts, and by constantly renewed perseverance in repeated efforts are purified and elevated by divine grace. There's something we do, but the grace is there to do it too. We're not doing it on our own. With God's help, they, these human virtues, forge character and give facility in the practice of good. And for some reason, I can't tell you, my mind flips back to one of my earliest childhood memories. I don't know where I was, but I was sitting on the back steps of some house that I can't locate in my mind. And I was sitting there for a long time outside because I'd been given some lollies and I hadn't shared them around. And I remember it now still. Maybe I was three. I got really tiny. But everything's to be shared. So, okay. So what was Mum or Dad, I can't remember, doing? I guess they were beginning to see that, no, this little child could be a selfish little bugger. And he's got to learn to share. So somehow or other that imprinted itself, and I haven't thought about it for years, it just flipped into my mind just then, talking about this, why, I don't know. But you've done it too, we're all doing, and learning and learning and teaching and teaching and acquiring ways of behaving that are beautiful and honourable and gracious and good. The next number in the Catechism says, it's not easy for us human beings wounded by sin to maintain moral balance. Christ's gift of salvation offers us the grace necessary to persevere in the pursuit of these virtues. Constantly ask for this grace of light and strength. Frequent the sacraments. Cooperate with the Holy Spirit. And follow God's call to love what is good and shun what is evil. And that was surely the purpose, however dislocated it might have been when I was a child. So when many of you were children, we used to go to confession every week or something, and it was a little way of training our sensitivity. It possibly didn't work as well as it should have, who knows, but that was the idea of it, to train us to be unselfish. I had to think for a moment about being selfish and not saying I'm sorry and hurting your little sister, and I'm just giving you my confession now, but everyone had the same one, unless you're a girl, which is hurting your little brother, I suppose. So it was little ways of training. Or in my training, anyhow, at the age of 16 when I went into the novitiate, and from then on, or even before that in the school, we used to have a thing called particular examine. It was an Ignatian idea, which we actually distorted. I didn't realise till I looked at Ignatius later. But religious life was like that too. It's habit. You know, people do things because it's always done that way. And that doesn't make it bad, but it doesn't make it good either. But we had this thing where you concentrate on a particular, that's what I was taught to do, on a particular vice or something that's not good. And you look at it, and you look at it for a few weeks till you've kind of got it a bit under control, whatever it might be. Impatient, let's say. So you notice I was impatient three times yesterday and then next day. So by observing it, you come to the point where you're not very impatient at all. You acquire something through the constant, careful practice of virtue.